I said to my soul, be still, and let the dark come upon you, which shall be the darkness of God. In tonight's reading from Exodus, we learned that the Israelites ran from the Egyptian army, and as they did, a pillar of cloud moved from in front of them and took its place behind them. It came between the army of Egypt and the army of Israel, and so the cloud there was with the darkness, and it lit up the night. How can that be so? Biblical scholars say the last sentence of this portion is ambiguous, which means no one knows what it means. Without explanation, a pillar of cloud, which does not give off light, suddenly has the ability to light up the night. Now, how many of you have ever seen a dark cloud of light? It's oxymoronic, impossible. We all know that darkness and light are two different things, right? Tonight, you will encounter three different perspectives on darkness: a human scientific perspective, an evil perspective, and a divine perspective. Consider with me how you understand darkness. Scientifically speaking, darkness can only be measured by light's absence. Darkness does not exist. It is simply a lack of light. Sociopolitically speaking, darkness does exist. It's a skin color. And it's compared to whiteness when it comes to immigration or policing, capitalistic trends, and nationalism. These human understandings of darkness have too often led to the stench of death and the still, stale air of a tomb. Evil has grabbed a hold of both ideas and let them loose on human beings like dogs. When light and dark are used to describe race, they become a part of a quack science with shifting levels of perceived darkness that divide and diminish all human beings. And when darkness is used as an adjective to describe a lack within a person, like the villain wearing black and the hero wearing white, whatever is dark becomes the scapegoat, the focus of violence. This is what evil does with an ambiguous opportunity. Evil takes every chance it can at twisting reality, separating what God brings together, crafting deadly binaries that can turn a person's good day into a not-so-good Friday. But God's darkness is not our darkness, and it's certainly not evil's darkness. God's darkness is not violent. It protects. It does not lead to death, but to life. God's darkness does not come at the end of life, but is present at its beginning. We heard in the story of Genesis that in the beginning, the Spirit hovered alongside the darkness as creation began. The darkness of God is part of the first stage of all life. I said to my soul, be still, and let the dark come upon you, which shall be the darkness of God. That was my opening prayer. It's a line from a T.S. Eliot poem. Eliot sees darkness as an essential, necessary quality God uses to bring about change. As a playwright, he uses this metaphor. In a theater, the lights are extinguished for the scene to be changed. With a hollow rumble of wings, with a movement of darkness on darkness, we know that the hills and the trees, the distant panorama, and the bold, imposing facade are all being rolled away. Many of us have seen this happen just down the road at Playhouse Square. The spotlight turns onto the narrator while the stage light changes and darkens and the scenery moves. Holy Week itself is a week-long theatrical production full of scene changes in the dark. On Palm Sunday at Trinity, the lights go out at the end of the service. At Tenebrae, one light unexpectedly returns to a flicker as the proverbial curtain closes. On Maundy Thursday, clergy exchange white albs for black cassocks and prepare the sanctuary to become a tomb for the body of Christ. On Good Friday, the lights are dimmed and there are no candles. Shifting darkness and light is what allows change to happen. And it all led us to this moment, at Easter Vigil, a service that begins in total darkness. But look around you now. Do you see the shadows dancing on the marble and limestone? Watch as light and dark tango together in the person's hair in front of you. Just don't bring your candle close enough to light their hair on fire, please. Tell me right now, is it light in here or is it dark? On Holy Saturday, it's kind of hard to tell. Well, it's theatrics, and it's theology, and it's science. Scientists tell us that this particular kind of light, reduced light, also reduces distractions. When the world is just dark enough, our vision and focus improves. Or as Theodore Retke states in the opening line of his poem, in a dark time the eye begins to see. And he's right. We do see better as things get dark. Our memory even improves. Twilight stimulates our brain's neuroplasticity. In other words, this kind of lighting helps human beings prepare for change. This has been a fact since your beginning and mine. We began our lives in a kind of twilight. The darkness of the womb lets in very little light, and this creates a protective, calming environment that aids our development. Diffused light promotes deep rest. 90% of the day, a fetus is resting, conserving external energy to develop an internal nervous system, its mind. It sleeps that much because rest is how a fetus matures. And we are not so different now than we were then. Every day we rest in this kind of light. Moonlight is just dark enough that when our eyelids close, we too can develop our minds and mature. This mix of light and dark promotes human rest and growth. So set yourselves to rest in this darkness as long as you can. A famous unnamed mystic wrote that. For if you are to see God at all, insofar as it is possible here, it must always be in this cloud. There's that cloud again. God's cloud, we read about in Exodus, God's presence among the people, represented in a mingling of dark and light. The cloud takes us one step closer to seeing darkness as God sees it. For God, darkness and light are the same. King David confirms this in Psalm 139, "Even the darkness is not dark to you. The night is as bright as the day, for darkness is as light to you." Our church mothers and fathers, mystics and monks have been trying to teach us this reality for centuries. In the 4th century, Gregory of Nyssa calls God's darkness a dazzling darkness. In the 5th century, Dionysius describes it as the brilliant darkness of God. And both of them say that we can only see this darkness because we can't see it. We can only know it because we don't know it. I know that sounds confusing. So here's a new theory from some physicists in Brazil, Switzerland, and Germany, who found in 2025 that the quantum state, once considered darkness, still contains light particles, known as photons. Their study revealed that darkness still has light in it. The photons are simply dormant, they wrote. The light is in a dark quantum state that cannot be detected by human beings. There is a darkness that we cannot see, but God can see it, and it is light to God. God's darkness is not something meant to be understood by us as much as it is meant to be perceived by us. We cannot see or know God's darkness, but we can let it come upon us. We can let it dance beside us. Tonight's darkness is the final scene change in the story of Jesus' death. The Christ of God is dead. But the air in the tomb is no longer still and stale. There is a wind rumbling between the stones. Maybe you can hear or feel this wind tonight. It's weaving and whistling among the flames. That same spirit that will raise Christ from the dead and hovered over the waters of creation is in the midst of us now. So if we will let go of our previous understandings of what darkness means, we just might find rest for our souls. The darkness of God is an invitation to trust, to have faith, not the kind of faith we muster when we want to feel strong, but the kind of faith we wish we could feel when we know we are weak and fragile, isolated, or in pain. If you are here tonight caught up in a human understanding of darkness, you may feel the existential weight of its unyielding nothingness pressing upon you. And if that is the only darkness you can see right now, that's okay, because God can see the light in your darkness. The light of Christ is here to guide you into the simple, humbling, awe-inspiring, restful, and healing darkness of God. God's darkness is the crucible of our transformation. God's darkness is generative and creative. Whether darkness is actually darkness is the question at the heart of the Paschal mystery. We are seated in the gap tonight between Christ's death and resurrection, and we cannot tell whether it's light or dark in this place because it is both. There is something about enveloping darkness, its silence and stillness and depth, that heals us. It comforts and soothes us, releases us from our compulsive need to account for everything, explain everything. The resurrection of Jesus is a blurring of what we think we see and we think we know. But we can't access the truth of this holy night until we begin to hope for and trust in and love the darkness of God for all it really is. I said to my soul, be still and wait without hope. For hope would be hope of the wrong thing. Wait without love, for love would be love of the wrong thing. There is yet faith, but the faith and the hope and the love are all in the waiting. So wait without thought, for you are not ready for thought. And the darkness shall be the light, and the stillness, the dancing.